This is KAB Antonio Bay. Stevie Wayne here.
And let me be the first to wish Antonio Bay a happy birthday. We're 100 years old today.
And keep a watch out for that fog bank heading in from the east.
Okay, time for another movie review.
The Fog.
Yes, John doing Carpenter. Another John Carpenter movie. Obviously, we did The Thing, which was what? Like our first or second one, probably.
Yeah, this one doesn't have the crustle in it, but it's still good.
Yes, minus the crustle. That's a shame. Minus the crustle. Yeah, the interesting thing about The Fog, well, this was his first theatrical release after Halloween, right? Yeah. And I mean, Halloween was a pretty big success.
Mm-hmm. Made up out of nothing.
Pretty much made up out of nothing.
And didn't become successful until it had been out for a long time.
Yeah. Right. Which I think people forget nowadays. And it's interesting because, interestingly, we have the Blu-ray, the Steelbook Blu-ray of The Fog. Mm-hmm. And it has like a really lot of extras on it.
Yeah.
And there's a really good interview with Jamie Lee Curtis. And she's kind of talking about, she talks about The Fog, but she also talks about
Halloween.
Her time as like a quote unquote scream queen. And she said the interesting thing is that she was in Halloween. It was like a big hit. It was a cult classic, stuff like that. She's like, but it didn't really translate
into
much work for her.
Or work, yeah.
They're like, pretty much after that, she was in what? Like a Charlie's Angels episode? Yeah. Like she was on a couple
Love Boat
episode.
Yeah.
She's like, that was about it.
Right. And then she ended up being in a bunch of Canadian ones like Terror Train.
Yeah, but that was after, actually, because the reason that John Carpenter wrote a part for her in The Fog, because she's not like the main character, she's kind of a peripheral character, but he wrote a part for her in The Fog just to give her some work because he felt bad that, you know, after the success of Halloween, like her career had not really taken off, but it did later on. So
yeah, one of the things I liked about Carpenter is that he hired his friends, and you could tell that these are movies being made by a scene, a big gaggle of friends, and you see the same faces over and over again. And you know, once you kind of become a Carpenter fan, I would call myself a Carpenter fan, even though Carpenter's hit and miss.
Yeah,
but his hits all have those same faces in there over and over again, you know?
Yeah. And it does seem like a lot of, particularly his early movies, this was actually the first one with Adrienne Barbeau in it, who was his wife at the time. And she went on to be in Escape from New York, obviously, and was in some other horror movies, Creepshow and Swamp Thing and things like that.
This one stars Adrienne Barbeau, but it doesn't star her boobs.
Unfortunately.
Because,
but it does
and
star...
And from New York, it has starred Adrienne Barbeau and her boobs.
Yeah. It was a double act. Or a triple act,
I guess. It was like a triple act. Yeah.
Well, it does star, but The Fog does star Adrienne Barbeau's sexy-ass voice.
Yeah, that's true.
Which I think was something that a lot of teenage boys really liked about it. There's something very sexy about Adrienne Barbeau.
What was kind of cool about The Fog for me is that kind of felt like a disaster movie.
Yeah.
Where it was a whole ensemble cast in a town and something was befalling an entire town. And it was kind of like this ensemble cast that was spread out all over the place. They may or may not actually meet each other, you know, or if they do, it's just kind of, they might be dead when they meet up, you know, like the guys on the boat.
Yeah.
Jamie Lee Curtis and all those guys, which it's kind of cool. And I would kind of call this kind of like a cross between kind of like an Edgar Allan Poe ghost story with elements of kind of Lovecraftian type of things where something is coming back to get you, you know, something evil and, you know, I don't know.
It's a very old school traditional ghost story.
Yeah.
Which is something that John Carpenter wanted to do specifically. I mean, obviously after he had done Halloween, which would kind of kicked off the whole, slasher boom that came about after that, he kind of wanted to do something more low-key, more old-fashioned, and he really liked... He said that there were a couple things that contributed to this particular story. He said that he and Deborah Hill, who were... they dated for a long time, but they had actually... They were still working together when The Fog came out, but they had split up, and he had subsequently married Adrienne Barbeau, which must have been an interesting film set. It's like, here's the woman that stole your man, and you're all working in the same film. But they didn't seem to have any...
They were
hard
all part
feelings.
Of that same scene.
They all seem very professional.
Yeah, they're all part of that same scene, and sometimes scenesters cherried out, you know?
Yeah, they do.
If you're in the goth scene long enough, sometimes you'll see some shit like that happen.
Well, that's pretty much constantly what happens.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Deborah Hill obviously was his co-writer on Halloween and had produced Halloween, and she was his co-writer on The Fog and actually produced The Fog as well. evidently, John Carpenter and Deborah Hill were in England and they were visiting Stonehenge. And he said there was a really creepy, like, mist, like, in the distance. And it was a very overcast day. And there was, like, all this kind of weird light, like, coming through it. And he just thought it was so beautiful and so evocative. And he's like, man, I'd really like to do something with that. And he also based it evidently, what is evidently a true story,
yeah,
happened in Goleta Bay, right? In California.
So where, kinda like
about a shipwreck and all this other kind of stuff.
Yeah, if you liked The Changeling, which was also kind of loosely based on
a true story,
on a true story. The Fog is also loosely
based on a true story.
On a true story.
Yeah. A particular, not, well, a deliberate shipwreck, I should say.
Yeah, some people in a town knew that a group of ships were coming.
Yeah.
And that they were transporting gold.
Yeah.
So they fooled the lighthouse by putting fires up on the shores, which caused the ships to run aground.
They're like, here, so come over here.
So they could go out there and steal that gold.
That is a horribly shitty thing to do.
And that story...
How can you live with yourself?
That story inspired Carpenter to make this movie and to write this story, which is kind of like a spinoff version of that same tale about some dudes that got screwed over by gold.
Yeah.
And on the 100th anniversary, all right, of them being screwed over by the town, they come back out of the fog like these spectral zombies, in a way, you know, they come back to wreak vengeance on the town, because the town was celebrating these guys on the 100th anniversary and they were celebrating murderers.
Yeah.
And that's
basically what it was. So the ghosts came back to take revenge on, you know, obviously not the people who had actually killed them, but their descendants.
The descendants.
I don't know if they mention that outright in the movie.
No.
They imply it.
Yeah, and you're like, well, wait a minute, the descendants don't know anything about it. They're innocent. But these ghosts are like, fuck that.
Fuck that.
Fuck that. They're going to die anyway. That's kind of the cool part.
Well, here's the thing,
though. That's kind of the Lovecraftian angle of being held responsible
for some sins of the fathers.
Yeah, some shit that you didn't have anything to do about.
And that's a pretty common thing, like in, like I said, it's a very sins of the fathers concept, which I think happened a lot, like in big old school ghost stories, where... You weren't even alive at the time, and yet fucking ghost is going to hold your ass responsible for shit your grandparents did or your great-grandparents did and stuff like that. So that's actually what ends up happening in the movie. And the sad thing about this is that, well, for all we know, I mean, in the ghost's defense, maybe the ghosts couldn't come back for 100 years. Maybe they were stuck somewhere. Maybe it was like a Beetlejuice situation where they're like stuck in their house for 125 years before they can go to the light or whatever. So maybe they weren't allowed to come back.
One of the things I like about these ghosts is that they're nautical ghosts. They're like seafaring ghosts. They kind of remind me of the pirates from the island in a way. They're not ghostly ghosts in terms of, you know, like misty apparitions. They're solid. They're kind of like zombies.
They are zombie-like.
Yeah.
They don't show them much, which I think was a good decision on Carpenter's part. They usually just show them kind of in silhouette. At one point, I think they show me as like glowing red eyes. And I think there's one scene where they show kind of the side of his face, and it is very zombie-like. It looks like
filled with maggots.
Like maggots and worms, like a corpse, kind of like a walking corpse.
Yeah, and there's like this big pandemic that hits the town of poltergeist activity.
I did like that aspect of it.
Yeah, they had a lot of, and it was just eeriness and creepiness because the whole town was being just consumed by this dense fog. And then you have the... you had the DJ in the lighthouse.
Yeah, Stevie Wayne, who was played by Adrian Barbeau.
And like the atmosphere is really cool because as people are getting fucked over by these ghosts, there's always like the radio in the background playing happy music that doesn't really, you know, jive. It doesn't really match the scene. It kind of gives kind of this creepy ambience to the movie.
Yeah, there is something really, and I think I have to say too, the art direction and the cinematography and stuff like that in this is really cool. And John Carpenter specifically wanted to film this. This movie cost only $1 million to make.
Well spent.
No, it was, yeah. And he wanted to film it in anamorphic widescreen specifically so it wouldn't look cheap, and also because, you know, the town of Antonio Bay was actually made up of
a bunch of different places.
Actually, on the Blu-ray, there's a really cool like little documentary.
They show you where these places
and this guy goes to like every single place where it was filmed, and it's really fun.
And what's weird, when you're watching the movie, the town and all these locations in the town seem very isolated and creepy,
yeah,
and kind of retro even for the 70s. almost kind of like it's taking place in dilapidated, old, abandoned towns. But when they take you there today, where these places are, there's like, you know, it's next to Walmart, you know, or it's,
yeah,
it's really built up and there's traffic everywhere. There, yeah. You know, it's not isolated.
Which you didn't really.
This is in the middle of like California coastal towns that are bustling.
Yeah. You know? I mean, some of it was in, I think Reyes Park was where the lighthouse was.
The church?
The church was in Sierra Madre, I think.
Yeah, the church is in the middle of a nice neighborhood.
Yeah.
You know? And they actually never really show you the outside of the church. They enter in through the back because
they want it to look like it's kind of
in the middle of nowhere, but yeah. It isn't. It's in the middle of a nice neighborhood.
But that was very effective. They did that very effectively.
And a lot of deception in the film.
But yeah, one thing I wanted to say about the cinematography and stuff like that was, I love the way, and John Carpenter actually specifically said that when he was filming the movie and he was kind of, you know, consulting with the cinematographer or the director of photography or whatever, he was like, I want the fog to be a character, to look like it has purpose, like it's movement and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I think that they were actually very successful in pulling that off.
Yeah, there are times where they try to really fool you with miniatures and you don't really notice it.
When
I found out that was a miniature, I was like, you know, some of the foregrounds sometime were miniatures.
Yeah, like part. Especially some of the really nice, like opening vistas of the bay. And you see this bright blue fog like coming over the water. Mm. And it looks like it's coming with intention.
Yeah.
And how they actually did that was they filmed the bay without the fog, obviously.
Yeah.
And then they filmed fake fog.
Actually, it's vape, like
from like a dry ice type machine you know, something like that. They filmed it like on a miniature. They built a miniature with all the same rock formations and stuff like that, like just on this black and just superimposed this fog over it. And then, you know, kind of matted the two together and it looks great.
Yeah.
I mean, it still does. This movie came out in 1980.
Yeah. And the outside shots of the lighthouse, that's a real lighthouse.
Yeah.
But all the interior shots is not a real lighthouse. The ones with the DJ in there, you know, it's actually a
they
set.
They wanted to be able to control the lighting, particularly where, you know, the shots where, you know, the night is coming and all these terrible things are happening and she's up in the lighthouse and they wanted to be able to control, you know, the light coming through the window from the lighthouse and all this other kind of stuff. But yeah, the outside of the lighthouse, it actually looks pretty much exactly the same now. Yeah. As it did in the movie. But the thing I always liked about this movie, and it's kind of, I don't want to say it's like a forgotten movie because I think it's sort of still a cult classic. It's obviously not as well regarded as Halloween or The Thing or even Escape from New York, really.
Yeah.
It's even when you're talking about John Carpenter movies, it's one that kind of maybe gets lost in the shuffle a little bit just because it fell between.
Yeah.
Well, it fell between what Halloween and The Thing, right? And Escape from New York.
A lot of people that actually starred in this movie really didn't like it. I don't think Carpenter really liked the movie as much as he thought he was going to like it. And the version that we have is actually the second version.
Yeah.
The original movie evidently was pretty bad. Most of the memorable things that occur in this movie were reshot later and grafted into it. Like all the ghost attacks and all the all the action.
That was another really interesting thing about this movie.
Was put in later. Right.
John Carpenter, I mean, he's basically saying, I mean, the movie was pretty much done. It was at the editing stage.
Yeah.
And he goes in to see the rough cut of the movie.
And they didn't
like it. And he's basically like, oh, shit.
Yeah, they showed it to the executives that actually put up the money for it. And they were like,
Yeah, no.
Boring.
Yeah. And they already had a release date at this point. So John Carpenter was like, what are we going to do? And he said it was a really horrible, stressful experience, but it was a good learning experience also.
Right.
He's like, because this was the first time that it didn't really work out the way I wanted to. And he's like, so we're going to still try and get the release date that we already have, but we're going to have to reshoot a shit ton of stuff.
Yeah.
And
they saved it. They pulled it out.
They really did. And the interesting thing is that pretty much all the best iconic scenes from this movie were all later. It was all from the reshoot. And I can't imagine what the original movie was like, because all the stuff, okay, like all the poltergeist activity, like at the beginning where you see like that was added later.
Yeah.
The opening credits with John Houseman telling the ghost story to the little kids on the beach.
Added
later.
The ghosts coming in and killing people.
Yeah, the ghosts coming in on the boats and killing people with the hooks and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Added.
Yeah.
All of this stuff.
Ghosts breaking into people's houses and hunting people down. All added. So what there was not much
That's
movie
what
there.
I mean. What was What was left? I don't understand. Yeah. And unless he just tried to go the direction of just entirely atmosphere.
Yeah.
Which can work, because I have seen a lot of movies like that that are very scary.
But not with this story.
But not with this movie particularly. And I think that they were concerned because a lot of movies that came out in the wake of Halloween were, you know, gory.
Yeah.
And I think they wanted, they didn't want it to be like a gore fest, but they did want it to have like an acceptable amount of gore so that people wouldn't be watching it going, where's the blood? Where's the killing?
So what they did was they took kind of like a paranormal disaster movie with an ensemble cast and merged in like some Friday the 13th elements into it.
A little bit. Completely over the, gory.
But just accents of that.
Yeah.
And I think it worked.
Yeah.
I think it worked. I think the movie, it's not a modern movie. The modern version of this was a remake and it sucked. Remember that?
2005, they remade this movie. And well, they made it basically just like a teen CGI fest.
This one is kind of like, it's kind of like a movie if you're in the mood for it.
Yeah.
And you will really enjoy it at night, you know, especially if you're having a few drinks and somebody's with you and you're, you know, you're in for a retro kind of a thriller with some creepy ambience, then this is a movie that you'll enjoy.
Yeah. And I was talking to you about this yesterday. I might have mentioned it on one of our other shows a while back, but I bought this huge book at Barnes & Noble that has 101 supernatural stories. Basically, they're pretty old. They're usually from like, you know, late 19th century, a couple early 20th century ones. And I was telling you yesterday, I said, the interesting thing about a lot of ghost stories from that period, which I really like, actually, you know, Ambrose Bierce and things like that, a lot of them have the framework that I am a narrator and I'm going to tell you some supernatural shit that happened to me.
Right.
Like 90% of the stories in this book have that element to them, that it's someone either writing in their journal or writing a letter to someone telling them about an experience that they had, or there's like a room full of people and he's like, I need to relate this thing that happened when I was in India or whatever. There's a lot of that kind of thing. And I feel like this movie is kind of a similar thing. It's similar. Okay, this movie is similar to Ghost Story, where the whole thing is kind of narrated by these old guys, the Chowder Society. So you have that kind of similar thing going on. Like you said, kind of like The Changeling, sort of. You know, so it's just a very...
In a weird way, the movie's kind of classic. In a weird way, it's kind of classy.
Yeah.
That's what I, you know, and it's classy in a low, but it's low budget. You can tell that it's low budget, but it's done well. Kind of reminds me of The Hand around, the movie that we reviewed before. In terms of just production quality, even though I think maybe the writing was a little bit better. I don't know. Maybe it's just a personal taste.
Well, and that was based on a book also.
Yeah, it's based on a book.
And this wasn't.
It's worth seeing.
Yeah.
I like it.
Like I said, especially if you really like Edgar Allan Poe, H.P. Lovecraft.
Yeah, like a Poe story.
Just a very classic, old school ghost story. Has a little bit of gore in it, but not much. It's more creepy. It's not like jump in your
like
face scary or anything.
Like something bad's gonna happen and you're not really sure what's gonna happen, especially in the beginning.
Yeah.
And we have the Blu-ray, of course, and the Blu-ray looks real good.
Yeah.
I don't know what it would look like, say, you know, like a VHS transfer into YouTube.
Well, yeah, that always looks crappy.
Yeah, it probably looks pretty cheap. The Blu-ray actually didn't cost very much, and I'd recommend it if you want to see, you know, if you bought Changeling. Because I know we have a lot of subscribers out there that actually buy the DVDs that we're recommending.
Yeah.
You know.
Now
we have a following of people going, yeah, I bought everything that you talked about. I'm like, oh shit. Now we're kind of responsible.
Oh my God. Now I know. Now I feel like pressure. Like, no, what if they buy it and they think it sucks? Then I'm going to feel really bad.
But you know, Blu-rays don't cost much anymore, especially in this genre. You know, you could probably get this one for about $6
and
delivered.
I feel like if you've already heard us talk about
it's only a little bit more than renting.
And it sounds like something that would be up your alley.
Yeah.
Then I can't see how you would just like despise it or think it was a total waste of money, especially if it's going to cost that much.
Right.
Like I said, The Fog, it's not my favorite John Carpenter movie, obviously.
Yeah.
It's not
better than a lot of his.
It's
though.
Not even my favorite ghost story, really, but it's a really solid old school ghost story.
This
is
better than Prince of Darkness.
I did not like Prince of Darkness. I think I've mentioned that before. Well, the thing about Prince of Darkness is that I think that the premise of it, and I'm all, you know, I'm all for weird premises. You know, you can have a weird premise. You could, you know, just take me with you on it. I couldn't go along. It just seemed too scattershot. Yeah. The whole idea of it just, I couldn't get on board.
Yeah.
It just seemed too strange. It seemed too unbelievable. I couldn't suspend my disbelief.
Well, he's making shit up as he's going along, if you ask me, with Prince of Darkness.
Yeah. I just, I really, there was just something I really didn't like about it. It, I don't know. Just the tone of it was weird. And, you know, it seemed like a lot of the people, like a lot of the students and stuff, were trying to be wisecracky and stuff. Yeah, and I didn't like that.
This one at least has a coherent story. And
it's a simple story. It's simple. And, you know, it's basically like this town was founded because of something these horrible people did 100 years ago.
Right.
Now we're having a celebration and these ghosts are pissed off and they're going to come back and take revenge on the ancestors.
And the characters act in logical ways for the most part.
It's
and,
a really know. Good ensemble cast. Yeah. Tom Atkins is in this, who I love.
The guy who played the priest is awesome.
Hal Holbrook is in this. He's really good.
And what's funny is that he, just him alone, is he's kind of a creepy character. I remember when I was when I was a kid, you know, that guy would just scare me, even though he's the priest.
Yeah.
You know, but he's just like...
There is something very creepy about like Hal Holbrook.
Some kind of a gravitas to him. And in that role, he's really convincing me that, yeah, man, ghosts are fucking coming.
And I kind of like what happened to him. Like, he's a likable character.
Right.
Well, and I was going to say, too, and I think I forgot to mention this before, Hal Holbrook's character, mm-hmm. he's kind of the one that reveals to the whole town
why this is happening
because prior to this, nobody knew.
Yeah. And there's a great scene at the end where he confronts the ghosts. I've got your gold. You know, I'm ready to pay for it. Basically, I'm ready to pay for what my ancestors did.
I'm not going to spoil the end, but I really do like the end. Yeah, and then the you're kind of like, and then so, and then what happens? You guys know.
No spoilers.
But well, other than what we already spoiled.
Well, actually, we didn't really spoil anything. We just kind
of not really. We're just like kind of talking about what
it teaser
is.
And an appreciation for the movie in retrospect. You know, back in the day, you know, we grew up watching HBO and they'd play this. A lot.
It was on a lot, yeah.
We kind of took movies like this for granted. And now they're kind of like hidden gems from the past.
Yeah.
They are good. And I
feel
think
like,
they,
yeah, and I was going
to... And even mediocre ones actually inspired cool shit to come later on.
I was going to say, too, that... And this is something that we've found a lot because we've bought a lot of old movies that we really liked from our childhoods and we've bought them on Blu-ray. And it's funny because when I saw them growing up, you kind of think like you like the movie, but you don't think it looks all that great or anything like that. But when you see it on Blu-ray, it's been restored and everything like that.
Like,
I'm like, wow, this is a beautiful movie. Like they really, everything looked cheaper back then.
Right. And I'm kind of going through that same thing right now with the Blade trilogy.
Yeah, he just bought the Blade trilogy.
At the time that Blu-ray. Blade came out, I took movies like that for granted. But you look at them now and I go, oh man, this is what's missing nowadays, you know? Really good action, good storytelling, and just the way it's shot. Del Toro did a great job in
Blade 2. Well, he's a fantastic director. And, I mean, I tend to like his, you know, more indie stuff. Like, I loved Pan's Labyrinth and I loved Devil's Backbone and stuff. I haven't seen The Shape of Water yet, but I heard that was really awesome and it won the Oscar and everything. So that's my next one.
If the audience is into it, man, I wouldn't mind doing like a reviews on entire series and kind of bring them back.
We probably will do that because we have bought, I mean, you bought the entire Blade, well, the Blade trilogy.
The Blade trilogy. I want to...
you have all the Planet of the Apes movies, the original ones.
The original ones, not the new ones. I got all the Beverly Hills Cop series, which is one that I'd like to get the Die Hard stuff. Expendables.
You have all the You have all the Back to the Future movies.
Yeah, if you guys are interested,
we have
in
all
that,
the Indiana Jones
all
movies,
the Indiana Jones.
Even Crystal Skull. Wah,
right? So if you guys are kind of want to go into other realms like action or just maybe classic series, you know, we'll take it that way if you guys. Because we
do have those. We just haven't done them because, you know, usually...
The priority has been horror and sci-fi so far.
And we kind of like to do ones that are not as well-known.
Right. Or kind of like they were well-known but not by younger people. Or maybe we want to revisit them and see how they've aged. Like, so far, Blade has aged beautifully.
Yeah.
Blade looks... better to me now than it did back then. Because you don't see that kind of stuff today, you know?
True.
Right.
So, you know, if you guys would like to see that, we would probably end up doing... I mean, you know, it's not like we have any super rules on what movies we want to do on this one. Like I said, I tend to like to do ones that maybe people haven't seen or maybe good movies from the past that have kind of got forgotten about, sort of, or, you know, more like cult classic type stuff.
We got people buying Saturn 3 going, hey, man, that was pretty cool.
That was a pretty good movie. Yeah. It's funny. Yeah. And I, you know what? I think I forgot to mention this on our review of Saturn 3, but that actually, I don't remember if it won or if it got nominated for, like, what are those? The Razzies? The Golden Raspberry Awards, like, worst actor, worst actresses.
Fuck that. I could fix Saturn 3. Well, I could take Saturn 3 and take all the space and exterior shots out, and then we'll get, like, AGP, get the Angry Gay Pope to do the space scene. Scenes, right? And then we'll some kind of thread in about 5 minutes of CG action at the very end to give it a more dramatic ending, and I could fix fucking
Saturn 3. Well, I don't really understand. Like, yeah, it wasn't a fantastic movie, but I don't know why it got such bad reviews, because, man, I have seen way worse movies than that. Way worse.
I know. And it was, they just ended it too soon.
Yeah, that's all it was. It was just kind of a little abrupt. I didn't have an issue with the acting. I didn't have an issue with any of that. But, you know, that's another thing. That's another thing. We already did that movie. Right, yeah. But like I said, you know, if you're a John Carpenter fan and you haven't seen this one, then I would definitely recommend it. It's, like I said, it's very old school. It's very low key. But it's got a really great cast, and the widescreen really lends itself, like the way this fog comes rolling over the water and everything like that. It's just really, really cool looking. And I really like the ghosts. I really like that it's kind of restrained.
Yeah.
They don't show a lot. There's a little bit of gore, but not much. And like I said, that was added later because of reasons and stuff like that. But it's just a really cool old school ghost story. I love that opening with John Houseman telling the little kids around the fire about the ghosts and 100 years ago when there was a wreck on the thing and everything. It's like, I love that kind of shit.
This is a perfect movie if you want to, like, curl up on a rainy night with somebody special and you're curled up in the bed with your big screen and your surround sound and your jar of mojito. And you sit there and you just kind of...
His jar of mojito. Yeah,
and you do it like a fucking jar of mojito.
Yeah, right? He has to have a jar, yeah.
It's got to be a jar, big mouth on it and everything. Matter of fact, I got a new jar the other day. That was the jar that the artichoke hearts came in. The mouth on this jar has got to be 5 inches in diameter. Perfect for mojito. Because
before that, he had like a giant mason jar.
Yeah.
And then when we used the rest of the artichoke hearts, it was in like a way bigger jar.
And I looked at that
and you said, put that in the dishwasher. That's my new mojito jar.
The bigger it is, the classier it is.
Oh my God.
Okay, let's end it. Let's wrap it up.
All right. So anyway, watch The Fog. It's really good.
Yeah.
Very good old school ghost story from 1980. And if you like the show, remember to like, share, subscribe, and share on all your social media and all that other kind of stuff. And tune in for our regular show.
Tell your friends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That comes out every Tuesday. And if you would like to support the show, check out our Patreon or go to our blog, which is 13oclockpodcast.wordpress.com. And there is a little link in the sidebar to a PayPal account if you'd like to give a one-time donation. And that will do it for this Friday movie review.
Yep.
We'll see you next time. Bye.